Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Cale Copeland and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thanks for listening. This is episode number 5 and I'm looking forward to speaking with mental performance consultant Dr. Bruce Pinnell. We're going to talk about the mind and how it affects health and performance and ways to harness that power. Now, before I introduce him, just a reminder that you, if you have any questions or you require assistance, you can always reach us here at Victoria Family Chiropractic at 250-592-5553 or online at www.vfchiro.com. That's V as in Victoria, F as in family, C-H-I-R-O.com. So Dr. Bruce Pinnell is a mental performance consultant in Victoria, BC. Dr. Pinnell provides mental skills training, support, and leadership through working collaboratively with athletes, coaches, and other sports science and healthcare practitioners. In high-performance sport, Dr. Pinnell provides services tailored to meet individual and team needs at all levels, up into and including national, Olympic, and Paralympic teams and athletes, and professional teams and athletes. Dr. Pinnell has been a member of the Canadian team at multiple international events, including the Olympics, Paralympics, Commonwealth Games, Pan Am Games, World Championships, and World Cups, and has supported over 450 athletes who have received medals at major international competitions. In healthcare, Dr. Pinnell has been providing group and individual consults in the area of injury rehab and has been part of successful injury rehab for over 3,000 clients from WorkSafe BC, ICBC, and third-party funders. His work focuses on using mental performance concepts and strategies to assist clients in optimizing their health and wellness while striving to perform in work, hobbies, family, social environments, and activities of daily living. That's stuff I'm excited about. Bruce obtained his PhD in sports psychology from the University of Otago, hope the pronunciation's right, in New Zealand, an MA in sports psychology from the University of Alberta, and a BA with honors in kinesiology from the University of Victoria. He is a professional member of the Canadian Sports Psychology Association, an NCCP Level 4 out of 5 course conductor in the area of sports psychology and mental training with the National Coaching Institute, and is an adjunct professor in the School of Exercise Science, Health, and Physical Education here at the University of Victoria. For more information about Dr. Bruce, you can Google him or check out his website at www.drbrucepinnell.ca. That is drbrucepinnell.ca. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Cale. Nice to be online with you.
Yeah, thanks for making the time with your busy schedule. So I'm looking forward on a personal level, but also for our listeners, because you've got a really interesting, maybe somewhat mysterious expertise. Although our listeners aren't Olympians or professional athletes, I definitely know that mental performance has huge applications for health and wellness and wide-reaching effects in our lives. So here we go. Dr. Bruce, you ready?
Absolutely. Let's get going.
Okay. So first question's got to be, what led you down this path? Like, what got you into sports psychology and mental performance?
Well, it all started actually at the University of Victoria when I was doing my undergraduate degree in kinesiology and was taking a variety of courses within the kinesis program. And one of the courses I took in my third year was the sports psychology course.
Okay.
And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life at that point in time, besides want to do something in sport. And when I took this course, it was just a whole bunch of lights went off.
Wow.
and a whole lot of concepts that some of my fellow students seemed to struggle understanding, or models, and they just made sense to me. It's like, oh, well, I knew exactly when and where that model, that theory, that concept had applied to me, both in the positive and negative. I've been on both sides of them, but it just made sense. And I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. So that kind of sparked my interest. And I started asking questions. Can you actually have a career in this area? And so that's how it started back then. And so, yeah, well, I kept going in my schooling and moved around, lived in lots of places. And yes, you did say it right. It's Otago. Came pretty close to University of Otago down in Dunedin in the south end of New Zealand. Beautiful, beautiful place.
That's great. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've known you a little bit for a while, and you're such a genuine, you know, caring, enthusiastic guy. That's exciting. So I guess another question I've got, and I think this is a really important one. So in the field of health and wellness and performance, you know, why and how does the mind matter?
Well, what's great in all this is that the connection between the mind and body, as you will know as well, is a significant link, but not very well understood mm-hmm. by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so what I really enjoy helping people understand is that there are certain things you do physically that when you do them actually impact your mindset.
Right.
An example would be if you make a fist and clench your teeth and bulge your eyes out, it actually changes what you're thinking about. You become aggressive, confrontational doing that. And if you step back, hang your arms out by your side and you smile, you also change how your mind is operating. So that's how that body part influences the mind. But conversely, what we're thinking about, and if we can direct those areas intentionally, under conditions of stress, under conditions of pressure, when we're anxious, when things are happening, if you can actually control your thinking, it actually will impact your body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a chicken and egg. It's they're both together, and it's a very we're quite hardwired, or there's a lot of hardwiring in our body that we don't recognize from mind and body link. So I really enjoy that challenge of working with the athletes and clients who are dealing with injury and health issues to understand those perspectives.
Yeah, that was a wonderful way of explaining things, and I think that yeah, you're right. It's a bit mysterious, isn't it? And yet, when you put it that way, it makes so much sense. So, as we go on, I mean, hopefully, you're going to share with us some really cool techniques. But that's awesome. I guess the next question is too. Like, so you're a mental performance consultant. Like, what's the difference between like? Is that the same as sports psychology?
Well, it's a good question, and there's a few different areas that all play together, and there is, you know, in terms of the whole world of psychology. So my PhD is in sports psychology, but I'm not trained as a clinical psychologist.
Okay.
And so in Canada, in different areas, you can be labeled different things, and in the States as well. But the field is sports psychology, because I'm part of the Canadian Sports Psychology Association. But as a practitioner, I'm considered a mental performance consultant because they don't have a clinical psychology designation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's how those things play out. And there are people in my field who work in the area of sports psychology who have a clinical psychology background. Well, who have a counseling psychology background, and there's people with the mental performance side. We all work together. We overlap on a lot of areas, and we also differ in other areas. And it's part of the challenge and part of the healthy environments that I'm part of with teams is when everyone is recognizing where those things are when we work together, much like when you have teams and or health teams or sport medicine teams or
right.
just general health teams that have, you know, physios, kinesiologists, chiropractors, and the medical doctors. Everyone's there for the same reason, to help the individual move forward, get healthy, get strong, and improve. But there's some overlap, and there's also differences, and it's understanding where those are and when to reach out to others to refer on to and to support. So that's how it all fits together.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, I just wanted to make sure, but so it sounds like there is a bit of overlap. So my next question is, you know, I think you're right. I mean, mental health is definitely, I think it's safe to say it's not super well understood, and there's a bit of a stigma associated with it. I think, like, you know, sometimes we don't feel comfortable expressing the fact that maybe we feel anxious or something, or fearful, and yet it's something we all face, right? So what are a couple examples of ways that mental health affect us in terms of our performance or our health? Like, so maybe some common examples that, you know, an everyday person might be able to relate to.
Okay, well, there are a number of things that are, I guess, it's looking at state versus trait scenarios. So there's a lot of things that people experience just in everyday living that are a state. It's a temporary state that brings with it levels of uncertainty, anxiety, stress, overwhelmed, confused. Like, all that stuff can happen, but often it's very temporary, and there's strategies you can use around that. Okay. But then there's also the trait-based ones where people are carrying with them on a more consistent basis from different environments,
Oh, okay.
not just acute environments, but chronically they have issues that might deal with some issues around anxieties or phobias, depression, and other things like that. So there are times where people can feel down and feel depressed, and it could be connected to more state-based things, and there's times where it's more trait-based. So it's a bit of murky sometimes, and it's probably the key to this whole process from my angle and with the other healthcare practitioners I work with is when you get to know the person and working with them, you start identifying where these things are and then finding the resources accordingly to support them.
Yeah, that makes good sense. So that was, you opened up an interesting little concept there. So obviously, you're from what you're saying there, there are scenarios where we can, from a certain moment to moment, we can have a feeling, right? But then it also sounded like you were saying that some people may have more predominant traits, like some people may be more predominantly anxious. And now is that genes? Is that the way we've been raised? Is that around? Is that the media or the people we expose ourselves to? Like what is that?
Well, there's definitely some hereditary issues that carry in play.
Okay.
But what's key in a lot of this stuff is that, and you mentioned earlier, is the stigma. And there's been a lot of work very recently, not just in the general public, but also in the field of sport, which we see some fairly high-profile athletes who have actually come out and spoken about some of the, say, mental health concerns they've had.
Yeah,
And it's a very interesting read and journey to learn about this and realize that yeah, they're up on a podium, they're up on a pedestal, that you see them on TV ads, but they have the same fears, uncertainties, concerns that a lot of other people who aren't necessarily in that profile are also sharing. And so the stigma is decreasing significantly when people are actually recognizing that your health, your overall health, not just mental health, your overall health is impacted a lot by how you think and how you look after yourself mentally.
Yes.
If you're hard on yourself, you beat yourself up on a regular basis, you deny yourself opportunities, you isolate and stay home, those are all things that actually start impacting your overall health too,
mm-hmm.
in terms of diet, in terms of exercise, in terms of sociability. And so with the stigma, I would be lying if I said there's no stigma, but the stigma has gone down significantly and people are far more ready now to ask for help, to open up about it. There's a ton of great resources, not only in Canada, but elsewhere. But Canada's got some great resources online, some very informative pieces of who to go to and what to talk about. And so there's some really good stuff happening now. And one of the areas I spent quite a bit of work on working with is working with a program that we're offering to our Canadian Olympic and Paralympic athletes, which is helping them with the resources around those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had some great ambassadors who have spoken up and led the way too. So it's changing. I don't think it's quite as it is yet, but it is improving, and people are reaching out more and more often now.
Yeah, well, it is, and I've definitely seen in sport just that whole increased awareness, and it's really important because like you'd said there, I mean, incredible how the mind and the way you think can literally impact, you know, physical things from your immune system to hormones. I mean, I
Absolutely.
Find that, and that's so exciting because, you know, this is something you can take a hold of and really work on your health and work on your performance, and it has an actual tangible effect. I mean, it's kind of magical, but okay. So, you know, you've got an impressive resume. I mean, one thing the listener doesn't realize is that you're constantly traveling the globe with all these amazing sports teams. They don't realize, you know, how many athletes you've treated and people you've worked with. So I guess I was hoping to get some tools. Like what are, you know, for an average person, even whether we're a professional athlete or whether we're, you know, a stay-at-home mom or whether we're a student, you know, we all have sometimes times when we're not feeling good mentally, right? So I was hoping to get from you today, you know, maybe some tips or some, you know, I don't want to say secrets, but, or some tools that, you know, an average person can use, you know, when to use it, how to use it, things like that.
Okay. That's a pretty loaded question.
I know. Okay. Yeah. So
I'd say it's a $1 million question.
It is a million
dollar
question.
$1 million, I'd be happy to answer it for you. it's a big thing. It's, I'd be hesitant to say that there's one kind of global cure all kind of approach that doesn't exist.
Of course.
Situationally is going to be really important, and advice you give to one person that might be very, very effective for them might not apply to someone else and vice versa. So that's important to keep in mind. I would say one of the biggest areas I spend a lot of time on, both in the injury rehab and health world, as well as in the high performance sport world, and when I call it a tool, it's really, I turn back to perspective. Mm. Perspective is a really important thing to have when you're dealing with some of the challenges you're facing. Mm-hmm. That so that the ability to step back. And I'll give you an example. You could be at I'm working with we're at the Olympics with a team. We're about to go into the final, the medal round, and I have a couple athletes freaking out, and they're very concerned, and they're so stressed because this is is overwhelming them, and it's. Mm-hmm. And they just feel like the whole world is about to collapse on them and all the pressure and so on.
Right.
And then, so I sit down and chat with them and step back and say, well, it's you do realize that you are being afforded an opportunity to go fail in something you love to do. You have an opportunity to succeed in something you love to do, but you're doing it by choice. Mm-hmm. You've put a lot of time and effort in there, but this is something you love. There's a lot of people who go about their everyday business who would love the opportunity to fail in something they love to do.
True.
And so it's kind of that perspective is really important to help them understand that when you step back and look at it, if the biggest concern in your life is that we might not beat the Australian team or if we come second to another country, if that's the biggest challenge you're facing, then things are pretty sweet. Because there's a lot of people who are paying to watch you do these things and support you would love that opportunity as well. And so perspective is really important. And another part of that conversation I had with some athletes several years ago in Beijing when they were preparing the Beijing Olympics, were there, and two of them were kind of getting upset and flustered by the next day's event. And I said, well, what did you think was going to happen? You spent the last 8 years training for this whole moment. Did you not expect to be here? And they looked at me and I said, well, you could be not in this final event and watching from the sidelines and having not qualified. Would you rather be there? Or would you rather the opportunity to put your best foot forward and see what happens?
Because
you trained for 8 years hard to create this opportunity. Now you've got it. So why is it now scaring you? It's exactly what you wish for. And so they kind of stepped back and looked at me and went, oh my gosh, that's exactly why we're here. Like, I wouldn't want it any other way. And so perspective helps. When I tie that back into kind of the lifestyle and the injury issues I'm dealing with athletes in the injury health psychology area, mm-hmm. with clients or from work, return to work programs or motor vehicle accidents and so on, a lot of them get very hung up on obviously the physical nature of their injury, the potential limits and restrictions they have on them now due to range of motion and pain,
right.
And they can be very overwhelmed by this. And it's very real. I mean, in their perspective, in their immediate world, it's very real to them because things are different for them. They're forced into change that isn't necessarily perceived as being fair.
Correct.
However, I kind of issue them sometimes, it's a bit cheeky sometimes, but they get the point, and we do have a laugh about it and get perspective. As I kind of challenge them on two fronts, I will say, well, I want you to go on to CNN or pick up your local newspaper and I dare you, I challenge you to try to flip through the first 5 pages of the newspaper or the first page of the CNN website without finding a handful of stories that you're going, holy smokes, thank goodness I'm not in that story. all I'm dealing with is a sore back right now, but I have a house, I have a family, I have a job to return to, I just can't currently do my hobbies and things I want, I got pain, but I am not in a tornado or a hurricane. My house hasn't been swept away by a mudslide. We're not in civil war.
Yeah.
We're not being separated and tortured and being kidnapped. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there that you'd be pretty happy you're not part of, and that your biggest story is the fact you got a really sore shoulder right now. And so they step back and look at that.
Yeah, and
I also ask them the second challenge. The first one is that newspaper/CNN one. The other one I ask them to do is just head downtown, walk downtown, and as you walk a city block, see if you can find someone who, a homeless person on the street who's begging and in poor health, and try to tell them how difficult your world is because your knee's bothering you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And ask, and I'm pretty sure they'd be willing to switch places with you immediately if all they had to worry about was a really sore knee or a sore shoulder. Because they don't even know where their next meal's coming from or where they're sleeping tonight. And so perspective helps you kind of go, okay, I can navigate through this. Yes, these are real challenges, and they're different from what I normally have to go through. However, I'm capable of making these choices moving forward in a way that's proactive and not being in a victim mentality all the time.
Wow. I mean, so you just mentioned something that sounds, it's a massively important topic. I mean, I guess, you know, yeah, absolutely. So now I want to sort of sidestep that, stay on that topic. But so let's just say someone's in a funk. You know, you're not scoring goals in hockey, or, you know, you're having problems with your relationship and you're not feeling good about yourself. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, is there a time, Bruce, when there's a certain trigger that we go, okay, I need to reset here, or I need some quiet time, or like, how does that look? Because we all get into those situations. So how do we catch ourselves, you know, and how do we go about the tools that do we need quiet time for that? Or is that just something we think in our mind? How does that work?
Well, it'd be fairly situational. I think if we go back to something we've talked about earlier, I think one of the biggest strategies people can have is just the ability to reach out and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be in a funk, you might be down on yourself. It's just the ability to actually say to a friend, a family member, a teammate, whoever it is, a coworker, man, I'm struggling. This is tough right now. I'm not enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredible how powerful just that. That is probably the hardest and most intimidating step into dealing with a problem is just talking about openly with someone. So mm-hmm. I would encourage anyone who's dealing with that. It's just to basically be human. Like just take off your false bravado. Take off the false sense of I have to be all this and more. I have to be the hero. I have to do all these other things.
Yeah.
Let that drop for a second and just say to a teammate, a colleague, a coworker, a family member, this is bugging me. This is what I'm struggling with right now. And as soon as you've opened that up, it's amazing what is out there.
Isn't that
great?
The
support and the resources that can be put together. In saying that, I'd also say there's several things that are some fairly simple and potentially key areas that everyone from an athlete, a high performance athlete to just workers and students and all these people who face challenges is I think one area that we tend to neglect and it tends to suffer from a lot is has a lot to do with our overall, not just physical health, but mental health, is sleep.
Okay.
Sleep strategies are a fairly significant area of what I have to do in both the healthcare field and with athletes because people's minds race.
Wow.
You lie in your bed, your mind is racing, but there's a lot of stuff you can do during the day that can either enhance quality sleep. And there's a lot of stuff we can do that doesn't enhance quality sleep. So there's a whole bunch of areas around that, and I'll give you a funny example. So let's say I've been having a really busy time at work, and there's been some reports are late, and there's timelines on me, and there's been pressure for a certain area to be done, and I'm feeling pretty stressed, and maybe I've had three or four really bad nights of sleep. Like I'm really struggling, so I'm waking up in the morning, I'm dragging myself around, I'm not really energized to get going on the day. But then, I get to Thursday night or something like that, or Friday night, and I have a chance to go out with my buddies to go watch a hockey game, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to the hockey game with my friends, but which is a really good thing because now I'm getting a chance to go out and do something fun for me. It's me time now,
right.
Which is a stress reliever. However, the choices I make that night have to support the fact that I've already gone four or five nights with really bad sleep, and I need to actually make choices that are not going to make it worse for me. So I shouldn't probably have a liter of Coke at the second intermission at 9 p.m.
Okay.
Because I'm already having sleep issues. I'm stressed. Well, putting in a liter of Coke into me right now is not going to make that better.
That's correct.
And so it's kind of looking at the scenarios. I'm happy to be out with my friends and do stuff, but I'll make better choices so I go home tonight and have a good sleep.
Okay. Yeah,
so
that's
it's
huge.
Kind of always kind of balancing those things off and helping people understand there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle to health, and it's not just simply taking your vitamins. It's not just simply eating good food. It's not just simply exercising. It's a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and that's huge. And you know, there's a lot of what you said there that I've taken. And I think one of the things is that, you know, you almost talked about identifying, like almost being able to assess yourself. Hey, I haven't been sleeping well this week. Hey, I'm stressed. You know, maybe the Coke isn't a good idea right now. Or you know, maybe I am struggling right now and I need to, okay, it's an issue. So I need to ask someone for help. So it sounds like a part of this is almost just like self-monitoring. You know, being self-aware.
So, yeah, Yeah, self-awareness and kind of the ability to reflect is going to be is a really important part. And I tie that into some of the stuff I do personally is we get busy times in our day and we get doing all, you know, lots of stuff piles on with family and work and coaching and other demands we have. A lot of stuff happens. Is I actually look in the daytime for those windows that I perhaps in the past have just taken for granted, but now realize that this might be half an hour. That's my time. It's me. Okay. I can do whatever I want right now. And so if I have that half an hour for me time, what do I want to do with it? Well, you know what? Instead of sitting at my computer and continuing to work on something else, I actually have a break. I'm going to get out of my seat. I'm going to go for a walk outside.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to get a coffee somewhere. I'm going to call a buddy and talk about my hockey pool.
Right.
I'm going to do something for me in this half hour or this evening, take my dog out and don't take the dog out because the dog needs a walk. Take the dog out because I need the walk. And I just happen to have a really good companion to do that with. So it's kind of making choices and recognizing when you actually have me time and don't take it for granted, but invest in it and get a sense of relief, a sense of satisfaction that you can park a lot of stuff and just do something to invest in your health.
That's awesome. I love posting. And, you know, and it could be so many other things. It could be, yeah. Hey, you know, maybe someone feels they need to have a shower or a bath or they want to, or they want to have a nap or what, you know, whatever. I mean, cause
exactly.
That's good. Yeah. So obviously there's a lot of, I think there's a phrase that says, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I think, just being, it sounds like a lot of this is awareness. Knowing ourselves to a certain degree, knowing what we need. And part of that comes from maybe life experience and also too, maybe just listening to podcasts like this and being able to tap into this incredible wisdom. So, you know, I want to move on, but holy smokes, that's a great, and if anything else comes up, Bruce, any tools, jump in right away.
Okay.
But I did want to talk a little bit about, the whole idea of changing people's behavior. I mean, I know everybody, we all have agendas, right? We definitely like to control situations. And whether you're a parent or a coach, I wanted to ask you about that. And, you know, is there research on is punishment more effective? Is encouragement more effective? And what's your sort of take on that?
Punishment and encouragement are kind of fall under the classical behavioral modification strategies.
Correct.
But there's other ways, there's other types of other psychology that looks at it as well. I know. I mean, if I look at behavioral change and say, well, punishment or encouragement, I really couldn't give you a global answer that applies across the board. Of course, if I'm coaching your son in hockey and they're not doing well, punishment for sure. I'm gonna sit him on the bench.
Bench him.
I'm just joking. Yeah, I think when I look at change, behavioral change is a big thing, and it is. There's a lot of factors at play. I mean, people, when you look, if you can imagine making putting your fingers together, and making a cross, and at the top of the vertical axis, you have the word big, and the bottom of the vertical axis, you have the word small.
Right.
And then on the left hand side of the horizontal axis, you have the word add in, more, or positive, and at the right hand side, you have the word less of, take away, or remove.
Okay.
So then it gives you four quadrants. And when you look at change happens when we're looking at change in terms of health, decision-making, attitudes, financial habits, relationships, nutrition, sleep, exercise, daily living, all the areas where change can take place in worlds, in people's lives, it can take place in those one of the four boxes. So it could be a big change because you're doing less of something, you're removing it. It could be a big change because you're adding something in that's positive. It could be a small change, you've added something tiny in. It could be a small change, you're stopping doing something. So you have these kind of four quadrants that change is going to take place in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always ask people to think when they're looking at change to fit, what is it you're looking to change and where does it fit? And then some of the change could be I'm adding this in, but by default I'm removing something else. That's a possibility.
Right.
But where does it fit? And then there's a range of strategies around that. And some of them do fall within line, say, of the classic kind of contingency models. If I do this, I get that. So reward.
Yeah, punish, reward, yeah. Thing.
But other strategies for change are peer support groups, are removing negative stimulus from the environment that are attached to a behavior. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. I made a decision years and years ago that I drank too much Coca-Cola. Okay. And this is a true story, so I'm not making this up. I drank too much Coca-Cola. And And the problem was, it's always in my house, and I drink it, and off I go. I'd open the fridge, I come over at the end of the day of work, and there it is, a big red glaring can in the fridge. Ooh, right? So I get all, so I have that. But I decided that's not helping me. And if I back up a bit, the reason it wasn't helping me is I've had two back surgeries. When I still have ongoing back issues, and part of my rehab, ongoing rehab, involves me doing a lot of core exercises lying on the floor. I discovered it wasn't very comfortable lying on a Swiss ball or lying on the floor with a belly full of carbonated pop.
Wow.
And so I would stop doing my exercises. Well, I realized stopping the exercise isn't the solution. It's stop having the pop is the solution.
Correct.
I need the exercises. So I use what I call kind of removing the one of the strategies was to remove the negative stimulus from my environment. And so what I did, I decided not to bring Coke into my house. Okay. So when I get home and open the fridge, it's not an option.
Right.
I can't have it because it's not in my house. And then when I go shopping, as opposed to doing my regular zigzag up and down the aisles, I just skip that aisle. So I don't have to go down the vice aisle with the chips and the pop. So I don't get a chance to put it in my cart.
Wow.
And so by simply removing the visual or the available or the stimuli that was attached to that, I've reduced the behavior significantly. Now, I haven't said no Coke ever. I will still go out if I'm having, you know, if I'm out for a pizza or something. I might have a Coke on a Saturday afternoon if I'm having a pizza with some guys or stuff. I'll do that. But it's not in my house, so I've gone from having, you know, one plus can a day to probably having two a month at most.
That's awesome.
Just by removing the stimulus. So it's not, I'm not punishing or I made behavior change by using other strategies too.
That's awesome. I could talk for like an hour here. I'm just trying to think. So here's another thing too. You know, obviously you're a well-read, smart dude. You know, if people are wanting to delve deeper into this field of mental performance, are there resources or books that you would recommend they check out? Blogs, podcasts?
Oh, okay. You know what? It's funny. There's a ton. You can go online and you can see a ton of stuff, and there's tons of books around sports psychology, mental. There's a lot of stuff out there. I would say there's actually, it may sound funny to you listening to this, but there are three kind of things that I've read or watched that had profound impact on how I approach my life.
Okay.
In terms of my consulting and in terms of how I live stuff.
Okay.
One of them is actually a book. It's a fairly old book by a guy named Viktor Frankl. And it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And
he was the guy that was in the concentration camps, wasn't he?
Correct.
Yes, I've read that. That's a great book.
Exactly. So that doesn't have any really how-tos in it in terms of, oh, do these exercises every day. It's not that nature. It was more just the book and the philosophy behind it, the philosophical nature of it really struck a chord, and it made me think a lot about myself and my role and how I fit in relation to it. So that was one really important book I read that was pretty fundamental to me and significant. A second one, again, it has a similar nature to it, but it's Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom.
Okay, yeah.
Which talks about the heart. I mean, it's an incredible book, and it's very moving, but all the hardship and being on Robben Island for that many years, sleeping on a mat and being denied very basic human things, but how he still treated his, we'll say, captors with respect and how he didn't hold them accountable. Just how we process what is really, really unfair. It clearly is unfair. It's incredibly – the hardship is amazing, but to listen to how we navigated through that and came through it was just – I looked at that one. That's pretty important stuff. So those are for a mental performance side of things. Is that it ties in that idea of perspective? It's really important to have perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think of specific maybe books or so on. I mean, one of the books I read years ago that really again was had a lot more how to in it, and it's been copied now many, many times. But it was Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Oh, I've never read that. Okay.
And it covers these 7 different habits about how we perform and how we prioritize stuff in our day and do we even know what we're aiming to do when we do certain things? And it's a little more philosophical, but he actually gives in the book a number of activities and ways of categorizing stuff and looking at it that helps you sort out in your head where things are at and how you're going to prioritize your life and move and to be effective in delivering it. It's not always we're often not very effective in the areas we need to be most effective in, which is around our health yes. and our relationships and things like that. So it's about helping prioritize. So that was a very influential book that gave me a lot of perspective from my personal life as well as consulting role.
Yeah, and well, the mind is a muscle, right? And a lot of what I'm taking from what you're saying is that, you know, having some discipline, having some guidelines, having some identity and self-awareness, those are really important. You know, I want to ask you a question. It's almost literally the opposite of what I'm typically asking people, because usually I'm asking people, you know, do they have any mental strategies? You know, and I want to ask you, from sort of reversing it, are there any physical strategies that you recommend that you feel positively impact our mind or our mental health?
Yeah, there are. And it's, I think, probably one of the most beneficial and positive physical strategies you can do have to do with diaphragm breathing.
Okay.
And it's an area that I spend a lot of time with athletes on. I spend a lot of time with our rehab clients on. And I spend a lot of time in my personal world is looking at when we get caught up in our hustle, bustle, and the world's going around us and spinning around, we tend to become very shallow in our breathing, and we tend to become very, upper chesty breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually not – that's not what we're wired to do. And the proof of that, of course, if you watch someone sleeping – what's moving is not their chest, it's their stomach, because the diaphragm is contracting down, which pushes the stomach out, and contracting up, which pushes the air out. That is our automatic breathing system. So as soon as you're asleep, you breathe from your diaphragm. And so if you kickstart that during the day, when you're at work, when you're performing, when you're in a conversation, when you're giving a speech, right? Playing it, you know, even in music and singing, it's all from the diaphragm because it has far more power to it, but it's also wired in with being in control. Because when you're breathing from your diaphragm, it's impacting in a positive way, lowering heart rate, lowering blood pressure, lowering muscle tension. It's increasing oxygen flow and a very efficient gas exchange. So you're getting optimal, you know, getting rid of all the negative gas through the gas exchange. Out goes the carbon dioxide, in comes the good stuff. Wow. And it seems so basic and primary, but at the same time, if you're in a critical moment and you simply take a few minutes to do some proper diaphragm breathing, where you're in traffic waiting to get to the hockey rink and you're stuck in traffic and you're going to be late, there's nothing you can do to not be late.
Mm-hmm.
Except for make bad choices and put yourself and others at risk. So if you breathe from your diaphragm in that moment, you suddenly get perspective and you think, well, what are you doing with this? Well, we're going to be late then. You let go of how significant that means. You may say, you know what? Oh, I'll just get on my Bluetooth and I'm going to call someone and let them know we're going to be 5 minutes late then. But it doesn't remove the fact that you're in traffic. It doesn't remove the fact that you're late. But what it does remove is the urgency and the sense of being out of control and the frustration attached to that. So diaphragm breathing automatically shifts you down, lowers all those things so you can now think clearly.
Wow. I mean, that's a game changer, I think. And the beauty is that, I mean, you could do this. You can be doing it right now as we're talking.
Yeah, I do.
And you know.
Because you're stressing me out, Cal.
Smooths out your nerves. And okay, well, listen, Bruce, I guess before we check out here, where can people learn more about you? I mentioned your website earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably the best site to look at stuff is I have just some basic pieces in there, and how to contact me is on there.
Okay.
There's a few other things out there on, you know, I've been interviewed at times on other things from CBC and stuff during the Pan Am. So there's some other stuff out there to read up on. But the website's probably a great spot to start. And if anyone has any questions or wants to reach out to me, they can go to the contact page and fire me off an email or go from there.
Okay. And so your email is drbrucepinnell.ca.
That's my website is www.drbrucepinnell.ca.
Okay, excellent.
From there you can go to the contact page where everything is that you need to get me.
Okay, well, hey, listen, thank you so much. I mean, what a awesome. I thought that was some really good stuff, and I hope people are going to find that valuable. I mean, we're out of time, but that was amazing. So,
hey, well, I do have one more piece here. You don't cut me off too short here, bud.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so it's actually tied into what you're saying near the end, and it's a phrase I use an awful lot. And you talk about the help of the brain is such a powerful piece. And I always look at most situations and advise people, flex your brain before you flex your muscles.
Okay.
Flex your brain before you flex your muscles. It's the most powerful tool you have. And if you do that first, you are capable now of setting up how to perform properly, safe, smart, sustainable, how to make sure you follow the right steps. Like you start being much more efficient what you do if you flex your brain first.
Wow, I should get that as a tattoo.
Sorry, sorry to interject there, but you talked about it. I wanted to throw that one in there. It's a mantra I use a lot. So
that is an awesome one. I'm going to write that down. Well, listen, hey, all our listeners, thanks for listening. If you think someone would benefit from this podcast, please share it with them. Dr. Bruce, again, thanks. Thanks to our listeners. We'll see you again in 2 weeks for our next edition of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfcairo.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.